Welcome to Healthline 3. I'm Jade Bilexa. Thank you for joining us. Today, we're discussing what's often a painful condition for women, endometriosis. Dr. Karen Birkin, who is an obstetrician and gynecologist with Willis-Knighton Women's Health Associates, joins me now. And doctor, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So tell us, we are here to talk about discussing and treating endometriosis and pelvic pain. And for starters, what causes endometriosis?
So it's the lining of the uterus, which is called the endometrial lining, that basically ends up in a location where it's not supposed to be. Mm-hmm. There's several theories as to how that happens or comes about, and the most common one is retrograde menstrual flow. So if you think about the anatomy of the uterus, there are two fallopian tubes that come off of that are close to the ovaries. And when everyone has a period, most of the bleeding comes down vaginally, but some does go backwards. And there's that backwards or retrograde flow for a lot of patients is what sweeps those endometrial cells with it. And then basically through gravity brings those into the pelvis.
And what are some symptoms?
The most common symptom is pelvic pain by far, which is a fairly vague symptom. Lots of women have pelvic pain for lots of different reasons, but pelvic pain by far, pain with your menstrual cycle that's disproportionate than what it should be, and also pain with intercourse sometimes, pain with bowel movements, and just some chronic cyclic pain that seems to follow this pattern, a monthly pattern. There's also other things that it can cause, like infertility, which a lot of women deal with.
Mm-hmm. And so what are some risk factors?
So we have not yet isolated the true gene. We think it's probably multifactorial from a genetic standpoint, but there is a genetic link to endometriosis. We see it too commonly in families for it to be a complete fluke. Mm-hmm. And so there is a genetic relationship there, and we don't know the exact genes behind it. There's also some other environmental factors that are part of that as well that can contribute to endometriosis. But it's a very difficult disorder to kind of pinpoint, because not only can it happen through that retrograde menstrual flow, but there's other theories as to how it comes about. Spread through the normal lymphatic or the blood vessel system that you have in your body. And so because we don't have an exact reason for why it occurs sometimes, we still don't have all the information on who's at more risk and, you know, why certain people have it and some don't.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, does endometriosis raise the risk of cancer?
So it can increase the risk of just chronic inflammation in the pelvis. And anytime there's chronic inflammation, there can be over time an increased risk of different pelvic cancers, but there's not a direct link between endometriosis and ovarian cancer or tubal cancer. The most common places for endometriosis to end up are going to be right where the tubes spill out, so near, underneath, or on the ovaries, or in the lower part of the pelvis where gravity takes it. Mm-hmm. There's another condition very similar to endometriosis. It's called adenomyosis, which is where the endometrial lining does not end up in the pelvis, but it actually kind of digs into the wall of the muscle of the uterus itself. Another cause of pelvic pain, again, doesn't lead to uterine cancer or anything like that, but it does cause lots of period issues, heavy bleeding, and pelvic pain.
Okay. So when should you see a doctor? At what point, if you think maybe you have endometriosis?
So if the typical over-the-counter medications for menstrual cramps, Tylenol, ibuprofen, things like that, do not cover your menstrual pain, that would be a reason to come in. If you are missing days at school or days at work because your periods are too painful, or if you're noticing this pattern of just chronic cyclic pelvic pain, pain with bowel movements, pain with intercourse, none of those actions should be painful. And so if you're having significant pain with them, it's always a good idea to come in and get checked out.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And remember, you can always call us at 318-219-4569. So you can get your questions answered by Dr. Birkin. She's here with us now. So we're talking all about women's health today. And how do you diagnose endometriosis?
So it's kind of difficult to diagnose, and that's why it goes undiagnosed or unnoticed sometimes for patients. There's no lab test or anything like that. So one of the first things that we would do if someone came into the office with these complaints would be to do a pelvic ultrasound. Now, sometimes if the areas of endometriosis are big enough, or maybe if they've caused a cyst on the ovary called an endometrioma, then we can clearly see that on ultrasound and then give the patient a clear diagnosis. But the gold standard for diagnosis is to actually do a surgery. Mm-hmm. And that surgery is called a diagnostic laparoscopy, which means basically placing a camera through small incisions in the abdomen and looking with our own eyes to see if we see it. Mm. On surgical examination, areas of endometriosis, they can be clear, a whitish color, or almost a deep red powder burn lesion color. There's several different types of endometriosis, and so you can see it with the naked eye if you're doing the surgery, and so that's the gold standard to diagnose it.
Okay, wow. And so what are different surgical and non-surgical treatment options? Can we kind of break it all down?
Yeah, so if you have a high suspicion for someone that has endometriosis and they want to go forward with the surgery, then at the time of that surgery, you also consent the patient to treat the endometriosis if you do find it. Ways to treat it are either excising the areas. So if there's a large collection of endometriosis, then you can actually remove whatever structure or whatever lining of the pelvis that endometriosis is attached to. It's always a good idea to do a biopsy while you're there so that you can prove that it is what you think it is from a pathology standpoint. And then we have certain tools that can burn or ablate different areas of endometriosis as well. Mm-hmm. So if you see small areas, because they're typically so tiny, area of about the size of a pinpoint, and so you just go throughout the pelvis and do a full examination and then burn any lesions that you see and take down any scar tissue that might have resulted from the inflammation from the endometriosis.
Mm-hmm. And does robotic surgery help with this?
It does. It helps significantly sometimes. The patients that have severe endometriosis, which I'll talk about the different levels or degrees of endometriosis in a second, but for patients that particularly have very severe forms of endometriosis, you essentially can use the robotic device to use a fluorescent dye to highlight certain areas that you might not even see with the naked eye. As I talked about earlier, there's some clear endometriosis, or there's a clear type, and that is particularly hard to see even during the surgery. And so you can use the technology with the robotic console and a special fluorescent dye to highlight those areas that you couldn't even see with the naked eye.
Hmm. Wow. And so are these surgical treatment options, is this a one-time thing, or how does that work?
So unfortunately, typically it's, hopefully the surgery is a one-time thing, but unfortunately women that have endometriosis tend to deal with it for a majority of their life. It's a hormonally dependent disease, so as long as there's estrogen there, which is the fuel for endometriosis, then it can always recur or come back. Mm-hmm. And so lots of patients that have endometriosis will undergo the initial surgery to be diagnosed with it and have it treated. And then if there are areas that either can't safely be surgically removed or excised, or if there's new areas that come about later on and the pain returns, then at that point, the hope is to not have to go back in with another surgery, but to use some of the other medications that we have.
Okay. What types of medications are available?
There's various different forms. Most of them are designed around depriving the body temporarily of estrogen. That is the fuel for endometriosis. That's why it's a condition that basically plagues women from the time they go through puberty to the time they go through menopause. And so there are various forms of pills and also injectable medications that are used to turn the ovaries off temporarily. So you do feel slightly menopausal potentially while taking the medicines, but as soon as you're off of the medication, then your ovaries turn back on. But by starving those implants for a period of time, they normally regress and go away.
Mm-hmm. And so what age does endometriosis develop, would you say?
Most commonly, you know, women will start to experience pain and discomfort even sometimes as early as their late teenage years. You know, it can develop pretty early as soon as those periods start. And then it typically is a slow progressing disease, and so it takes several years until their pain is significant enough to where they come in and have an evaluation for it.
Mm-hmm. And so tell us what might cause other pelvic pain.
So there are your ovaries there as well. Those can always form cysts or different masses. There can be your bowel, your bladder. There's other structures that are in the pelvis as well. And so not all pelvic pain is endometriosis, but a lot of it is. And so when a patient comes in, we're typically asking questions to try to delineate between whether this seems more of a bowel symptom, more of a bladder symptom, or if it seems something more associated with the female reproductive tract. If it seems more female reproductive in nature, then that's when we go forward with the ultrasound and potentially offer surgery as an option for diagnosis and treatment.
Mm-hmm. And we have Jerry on the line right now. Good afternoon to you, Jerry. What is your question?
My wife in 2012 had an ovarian cyst removed, and the doctor that removed it has left town. And she was talking to a doctor in church not long ago. She had a UTI or something. And the doctor said, as long as she had one partner, said, you won't get an ETI or anything like this. And I asked her, when was the last time you was checked? And that was back in 2012. Do you think she needs to be checked again?
Probably.
Or she needs to have her checked up?
Do you know what the reason for the ovarian cyst was, or did they give you the diagnosis of that, or what it was composed of?
No, it was just a benign cyst.
Gotcha.
And they removed it, and that's all they told me, was a benign cyst.
Well, certainly, if she's having any symptoms, I would definitely recommend her coming in to get checked out. But if it's been since 2012, since a regular OBGYN annual visit, then I would definitely recommend getting in as well, just for a pap smear, a routine checkup. There's other things, mammograms and colonoscopies and all sorts of things that we recommend and that we do for patients. And so if it's been a while, definitely it would be a good idea to come in and get checked out.
Well, she has a mammogram every year, and she did have a lump in her right breast, and they did a lumpectomy at LSUS.
Okay.
And she is continually checking her, the breast and everything.
Good. Well, that's excellent.
I told her, I think you need to be checked every year on this. She is now 76 years old.
It's recommended that at least until age 65, someone comes every year for an annual checkup. And then after 65, you can space those visits out to every couple years, but it's still recommended to come in.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
You're
Is
welcome.
There any way she can see you? Or
Sure. I believe they'll give the information for our clinic at some point, but it's Women's Health Associates. It's at 2400 Hospital Drive, which is close to Willis-Knighton-Bossier. And the number to call is 318-212-7931.
212-78-what?
212-7931 is the number to reach the clinic.
7931.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yeah, I'll call the clinic and all, and see if I can't get her set up an appointment and all, and recheck out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you very much, and I appreciate you very much. And
of
God
course.
Bless.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you. All right. And again, the location to reach Dr. Birkin is 2400 Hospital Drive, Suite 240 in Bossier City, 71111. Yes, so it's important to follow up with if you have any kind of cyst, especially after 10 years or so, right?
Right, absolutely. And there's certain things that can either go unnoticed, or, you know, symptoms are fairly vague. Pelvic pain, who doesn't have the stomach or the pelvic pain mm-hmm. every once in a while? here and there, and on an exam, there's certain things that we check for, make sure everything looks normal, but also we check to make sure that the uterus and the ovaries are normal sizes. And people can go years and years and years. The body is an amazing thing, and it can compensate for a lot. And if something is slowly growing over time, then it can often present with very little symptoms because the body just naturally adjusts.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Okay, so let's get back to talking more about endometriosis. Let's kind of talk about some of the pain relievers. What would help with pain and treating pain?
So, you know, you try to avoid placing patients on chronic strong painkillers, so narcotic pain medication, because those are habit-forming medications, and you want to treat the source of the problem and not just cover up the problem with pain medication. But there are certain anti-inflammatory medicines, ibuprofen being one of the most common, or Motrin, one of the most common ones, which can do a lot as far as treating the inflammatory pain that's caused by endometriosis. Other treatments, sometimes just putting patients on a regular birth control pill can kind of ease that pain just enough to where they're able to carry on with their regular business without a whole lot of an issue. On top of that, there's some a little bit more radical treatments where for the really severe cases of endometriosis, you can actually go in and ablate or knock out the nerves that would innervate those areas of the pelvis to give patients more prolonged pain relief. And that's more for patients that fail other medications or other treatment modalities and still have significant pain despite those other treatments.
Mm-hmm. And how common would you say endometriosis is?
It's fairly common. You know, the data is on symptomatic patients is the most accurate. And so patients that have, or women that have pelvic pain, the data shows anywhere from about 25 to 50% of women that have pelvic pain actually do have at least one small area of endometriosis. Mm-hmm. So it's very common. When you think about 50% of women that have chronic pelvic pain have endometriosis, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Now, when you consider the overall population, even patients without symptoms, the data is very, very wide. Mm-hmm. Some reports say as low as about 2% of women, others about maybe 20 to 22% of all women that don't have symptoms still have endometriosis. Mm-hmm. There's patients that have one small area and they're in excruciating pain, and then there's other patients that have it completely throughout their pelvis and lots of inflammation, and they really don't feel or notice much pain at all. So we are surprised sometimes when a patient comes in for a different reason, maybe fertility problems. They've been trying to get pregnant for years, they haven't been able to, everything else checks out, they're having regular cycles, we have no reason as to why they're having trouble getting pregnant. We offer to do the surgery for endometriosis, and sure enough, they have it, and they had no idea, they had no pain or symptoms, and we were able to diagnose it, and then also we can treat it while we're there. So if there's an area of it that's on the tube or on the ovary, it could very much be causing enough inflammation or even scar tissue to where the egg cannot make it through the tube. Sometimes the tubes are scarred from endometriosis, and so that's a big factor for infertility as well.
Wow. And so any kind of pain you're feeling, you should always get checked out by a doctor.
Yes, absolutely. And I kind of mentioned earlier, you know, there's several different degrees of endometriosis.
Yes.
It is invasive. There's superficial types, there's different colors. As I mentioned earlier, there's clear, there's a white color, and there's kind of a reddish or a powder burn color of lesion. And there's the superficial type and then a deeper infiltrating type of endometriosis. The deeper type is much more painful, and it just digs into the lining of the pelvis and causes a lot of problems. And we kind of grade it on a similar scale, stage 1, 2, 3, or 4, as we would a cancer, just because it does invade the surrounding tissue, even though it's not cancerous.
Mm-hmm.
And stage 1 would be very minimal. stage two, still pretty mild disease. Once you get into stage three and stage four, you have that deeper kind. Oftentimes there's other structures that are stuck or adherent to places in the pelvis where they're not supposed to be, and significant pain.
And we have Elena on the phone. Elena, good afternoon to you. What is your question? Okay, we lost Elena, but feel free to call back. Okay, so the levels where you have the excruciating pain, would you need a hysterectomy then?
So a hysterectomy can certainly help, particularly if you have the type of endometriosis that is the adenomyosis that's into the wall of the uterus itself. If someone has that, then a hysterectomy is going to make them feel a whole lot better. Mm-hmm. Now, doing a hysterectomy, that is removing the uterus and the cervix. We often do take the fallopian tubes out during a hysterectomy as well, but a standard hysterectomy leaves the ovaries in place. And so if we're doing a hysterectomy for endometriosis, then we can certainly burn and ablate all of the areas that we see. But as long as the ovaries are still there, still producing estrogen,
right,
then it can recur or grow back. Once someone goes through menopause, then they're basically done with endometriosis. And so whether that's naturally around the age of 50 or whether that's at the time of a hysterectomy with removal of the ovaries, then at that point the endometriosis should basically be stopped forever.
So if you have endometriosis, are you always going to have infertility problems?
Not always. There's plenty of patients out there that have pretty significant endometriosis and would never know it and have no trouble getting pregnant. And that's why it's such a difficult thing to not only diagnose, but also, you know, pinpoint the severity of just based off of symptoms. Mm-hmm. We often don't know until we look into someone's belly, you know, and do the diagnostic laparoscopy and actually see the extent of the disease. Mm-hmm. And where it's located too. You know, you can have one small implant that's right over a nerve, or you can have the whole pelvis coated in it, but it's in areas that don't have a whole lot of nerve supply. And you just have no idea on talking to the patient how severe or minimal the disease is until we actually get in there and look.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I'm learning a lot today about endometriosis and pelvic pain. So let's talk just a little bit more about treatment and just kind of walk me through the steps of, you know, what happens when someone is diagnosed with endometriosis. What are the steps that you all take as doctors?
So if I do the surgery and I diagnose it at the time, I would burn any areas and try to fix any areas that I could possibly find. Then occasionally there are some implants of endometriosis that are over structures or too close to important structures or blood vessels to where you can't treat them or burn them. Mm-hmm. Surgically. The ureter, for example, that's the tube that runs from the kidney to the bladder. Mm-hmm. You only have two of them, and if you injure one or both of them, that's a big issue. And so if there's an area of endometriosis directly over a ureter, we tend to leave it alone. Mm-hmm. And then after the surgery, once the patient's awake, I sit down with them, I talk about the severity of the disease, what stage of endometriosis they had, if I was able to get all of the areas or if there were some areas that I had to leave behind. And at that point, I basically give the patient the option. Do you want to start a medicine at this exact moment so that we can prevent future flare-ups or future episodes? Or do we need to start a medication shortly after surgery to help those other areas regress that we weren't able to address during the surgery? Mm-hmm. If they decide to do the medicine at that time, then I typically follow up with them about every 6 months and see how they're doing from a pain standpoint. Most of the stronger medicines that are available, because they are so strong and it's not healthy for your bone health or other parts of the body for you to go without estrogen for prolonged periods of time, we have to use the medicines kind of sparingly or just for short spurts of time and give people holidays between. Okay. And so I have them back in about 6 months. We see how they're doing. If their pain is completely resolved, then I'll give the option of getting off of the medicine. If their pain's continuing, we can continue the medication for up to 2 years before you have to take a holiday from it.
Okay. I mean, what if you decide not to take the medicine? I mean, will you still feel pain near the ureter?
So commonly, yes, if the endometriosis is still there, they feel significantly better because you've treated all of the other areas, but they may feel a pinpoint discomfort right where that ureter might be. And so if they're wanting to forego the medication initially, then I just tell them, please call me, get back in to be seen if your pain continues or worsens, or if you ever decide that you do want to get on the medication. Because now, once you have the proof, the diagnostic proof, and you've gone in, you know that they have endometriosis, then from a treatment standpoint and from an insurance standpoint, you can pretty much assure that you'll be able to get the medication covered.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have proof, some of these medicines are fairly expensive out of pocket if insurance doesn't cover them. So a lot of insurance companies will require surgical proof and a biopsy that proves that they actually do have endometriosis before the company will cover that prescription.
Yeah, and insurance covers the surgery for endometriosis.
Yes, everyone has different benefits and different deductibles and whatnot with their insurance, but it's not very difficult typically for patients to get that at least partially, if not fully, covered by their insurance.
Yeah, that's important. Okay, so good deal. So, tell us more about, so we don't really know what causes endometriosis and some of the risk factors, but we do know the ages. It can affect women under 50, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about the youngest patients you typically see can be in their teens.
They can be. I've performed plenty of surgeries on patients in their upper teenage years. Most of the time, I try to use birth control pills or some other less invasive method to try to treat their pain first. And it's not until when they come to me and they say, we've tried this and it hasn't worked, or my pain is excruciating. A lot of times I'll see patients that have seen several providers, or maybe they've seen a gastroenterologist or a GI doctor or someone to work up the other possible causes of pelvic pain, and everything's come back normal, that they then come into my office and they're frustrated because they've tried a lot and nothing has helped. And so, you know, it's never my first goal to take a young patient straight to surgery. You know, you want to try everything else that you can first. But there's plenty of patients by the time they're, you know, 17, 18 years old or in their early 20s that they're just in such significant pain, and they really truly have tried everything that you've asked of them and nothing has worked, where you finally just say, and they're ready to just go and just see if there's endometriosis at play. And very, very commonly there is.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Birkin, for coming in and just tell us how people can reach you. What's your phone number for folks out there who want to be seen?
Yeah, so it's Women's Health Associates, which is part of the Willis-Knighton network, and I'm at 2400 Hospital Drive, Suite 240, which is right next to the main Willis-Knighton-Bossier Hospital. The phone number to call is 318-212-7931.
All right, and this is such an important health issue for women. I know people myself who have dealt with endometriosis, and definitely something important we needed to get the word out on. And I think you already have a patient who called earlier who wants to come see you. So thank you so much for coming on today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's never a bad idea to schedule an appointment with your doctor and just sit down with them and discuss what you're feeling. And you know, you never know, there could be something wrong or there might not be, but even that reassurance that everything's okay is helpful.
Yeah, and get your annual exams, right?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. And we appreciate you watching this edition of Healthline 3, and we'll be back again soon with another edition. Have a great day, everyone, and stay healthy and hydrated.